This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
It is a football Friday. It's a Black Friday. It's still a holiday weekend. Brady Quinn's fired up about it. LeVar Arrington's fired up about it. And we will take you all the way up until 9 a.m. Eastern time, 6 o'clock Pacific here on Fox Sports Radio. How are we feeling on a Black Friday post-food coma?
Oh,
I feel awful. I'll just be honest with you.
Do you really?
I ate way too much, man. Way too much. Yeah, just a terrible, terrible feeling through and through. We did. I didn't even have turkey. I did the baked mac and cheese. I had apple. I haven't had sweets in like a month. Had an apple pie. We had some pumpkin cheesecake. All Ooh. Of it. It was rough through and through, man. And I feel awful. I worked out this morning. I ran. I almost puked on the run because I could just feel the food hadn't totally digested. It is awful. Yeah,
what
just gonna have to wear it.
Man, let me tell you, what a tough life you live. I went through a couple courses. Didn't feel great afterwards. I feel fine this morning, you know, like any other human being who eats food and then, you know, has to digest it the next day. I'm not sure where you're at on this, but.
Well, I mean, clearly something's going on there. Don't you know? You sound very quiet.
It's a football Friday. It's a football.
It
Friday.
Is. It is a football Friday. It is.
We just wish we could hear you, Brady. That's the only thing we could wish we could hear you on a football Friday. That would be the most important part of the important part of all of
I mean,
this.
I'm trying.
There it is.
There we go.
Up.
Are we good here?
We're all turned up now. Listen. I don't eat a lot of that stuff that often, and so I'm just wearing it right now. And I'm,
I can see that.
I'm just hoping I can make it through the show without incident. That's all I'm saying. Just want to say.
Do you think you're going to have an incident?
Oh yeah.
You
need your porter potty.
No. I'm good.
Your kitty seat.
I think I'm good. But yeah, you know, maybe a commode in studio. There it is.
Geez.
That is all a. Right. By the way, you could tell Roberto's still off for the holiday because he would have dropped the fart noise.
That would have been
his go-to. But how are we feeling? Everybody good? Ready for an exciting weekend in the NFL and college football?
Well, it's already started, right?
Yeah.
The excitement has already started.
I don't know. There was one game that really bothered me last night.
Oh, I know
really
it did.
Really grinded my gears.
I'm sure it did. I'm assuming I know which one it was.
Okay. Well, which one do you think it is?
I'm assuming. I mean, I thought you were the one who said it was over for Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming.
Well,
that
assumption's wrong that I give a crap about that. I've been trying to explain to LeVar now for like 6 months.
He's busy.
No, it's because of 28 penalties. I don't care which side of the fence you're on because each team had 14. But when you're talking about, what was it for Dallas, 166 yards in penalties?
That's nothing. Yeah,
dude, get out of the game. Like, I'm saying this from a Cowboys fan standpoint, from a Raiders fan standpoint. Stop. And the truth is, look, you probably could have thrown a few more. The Dak Prescott throw to Noah Brown when he was pushed out of the pocket to the right, it was a little bit off and behind, a throw he's got to make. Terrence Steele should have been called for holding. He wasn't. So I get every single play. You could probably throw a flag. That doesn't mean you should. I mean, especially, the Anthony Brown game was awful. Absolutely awful. For those who don't know, that the Dallas Cowboys cornerback had four pass interference penalties, which obviously led to a spot foul first down, and ultimately at the end of the game in overtime, the game
too.
Winner. Yeah.
By the way,
I thought that was the most questionable one of all of them. By the way,
how much of that 160 whatever was on him just in PI calls?
That play alone was what, 33 yards?
So is that one of those ones you guys talk about where they're going over in slow motion with the clicker on the film? Like, this is what you don't do. You got to adjust to this.
I think you just got to tell them at some point. Let them run. Don't touch them. Like, try to be the best person that you can be in coverage without touching them beyond 5 yards.
The ball was underthrown.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it wasn't a good football. They kind of bailed out Derek Carr on that play.
Yeah. I that was a few times.
Yeah.
It was a few times. And that's, you know, the interesting thing is I'll take the other side of it. I do agree. And it's so funny because I when I was calling the Cleveland Detroit game, it was like bad teams make a ton of unforced errors. That's what they do. You get penalties that cost you. You make mistakes in execution that cost you. We saw both teams.
Is Dallas a bad football team though?
Well, now that becomes a question. I know, and that's what makes me like it. Are they a 7-4? And this is what question I left the game asking myself. Is this NFC East leading team a 7-4 elite team, or is it a 7-4 team because the NFC really isn't that good? You know,
I think we've known that for years now.
Well, so here's the thought. Like, coming out of that game, Oakland was the better team.
Vegas.
Excuse me. Why do I keep wanting to call him Oakland?
You call him the Sudan. Who cares?
You know, to be honest with you, I mean, yeah, okay. Well, Vegas, the Vegas Raiders, Vegas Raiders, they were the better team in that game. And however we want to slice it up, I don't think they ever led, if I recall. Like, I don't think they ever even led one time in the game.
I don't think Dallas led. I don't think they did.
So then you got to ask yourself the question. If you're looking at the Vegas Rams as a team that almost –
Didn't they score the first touchdown?
Well, no. I think the Raiders went up early, and then Dallas tied it. And then the Raiders
– No, they didn't tie it, right? Are we saying Dallas or the Raiders? Which perspective are you talking from?
I'm saying Dallas never led in the game.
Oh, gotcha.
I believe Dallas never led in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea of it is – they definitively proved that they were the better team in the game. And if we're looking at the Raiders as a team that was on the cusp of basically falling off the cliff and what is still perceivably now with the emergence of the Chiefs doing what they needed to do, you're still talking about a super competitive AFC West. Why is it? And it's funny because coming into the game, Dallas did not have success, has not had success against AFC West teams. So is there a mental block there where you just don't want to play against AFC West teams if you're McCarthy and the rest of the coaching staff? Or is this a situation where you have to ask yourself, should we be looking at Dallas as an elite team? That's what I came away asking myself.
I don't know what to make of Dallas. I really don't, because I was all in on them. I think, you know, Brady wanted me to say last week was a Super Bowl preview between them and the Chiefs. I didn't want to do it, but he took. I don't know. It's more fun to blame you than blame myself.
Did you get that report from Patch.com?
That was a possibility. But let's be honest.
Patch.com.
But come on now,
VIP access.
I know that. I don't know which one of you guys did say that, but
I did.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Figured.
Just by default,
but hold on. But here, to your defense, we didn't come out of the Tampa Bay, and I know this was early first game, but we didn't come out of the Tampa Bay game feeling as though you wouldn't be able to say, this is an NFC championship preview. You know, oh, we'll see you again. Like, we didn't feel that way. And in certain games, we have not felt that way about Dallas. But after this game, there was no way you could sit there and come away from that game and be like, you know what? Dallas lost the game, but, man, they sure are good. It just seems as though they're having some tremendous struggles on offense. And I don't understand why it's so hard for them to be able to score. Now, they made it to 30 points, but, man, you're talking about a snail's pace to try to get to that 30-point mark. It didn't look good. It didn't feel good. And if I were a Dallas fan, I would be questioning and wondering, why is it that our offense isn't more potent than what it is?
They missed CeeDee Lamb. I mean, they clearly missed CeeDee Lamb, some of that
and Amari Cooper
ability. And Amari Cooper as well. Like, those two, they really missed. I mean, I just think they're more consistent pass catchers. They're better getting yards after the catch. That was somewhat evident. I mean, when Dalton Schultz starts to be more reliable, you know, receiver at times, you know, Gallup had a nice, catch down the stretch. But I feel like those two guys would have made a big-time difference. So I'm not, like, riding the ship on this team. The NFC East is terrible. The Cowboys are still going to win it. They're 7-4. The more interesting thing is really with the Raiders now and DeSean Jackson, who's he's so much fun to watch, man. Like, his entire career has been built up on, like, just highlight reel plays. It is amazing. How old is he now? And he's still catching these, like, 50-yard plus bombs.
So he's just he's just always going to run a sub 540, right? Even at like 75 years old.
Daryl Green still runs a sub 440 right now.
Like it still lasts. Like the guy still gets open. He still finds a way to beat coverage. He is, man.
And he's comfortable. And he's comfortable against teams like Dallas. You know, teams like the Eagles, teams like the Washington football team. Yeah, he's comfortable against them.
He used to eat up that division pretty good. That's
he's been accustomed. He's played on Washington at one point too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he
Washington,
did.
Philly. I mean, he might as well just play for the Giants before he
might as well. Made his rounds through the entire cycle.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, the penalties and all that. Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones, you know, always wanted to find a microphone after a game or before a game or twice during the week on radio. He spoke about the game following the loss.
Oakland took advantage of the situation. I call it throw up ball. Right way to play the game like this. Just throw it out there and get a penalty. That's it.
166 yards of penalties. Yeah. What do you make of that?
Well, this will probably be arguably the most watched game other than the Super Bowl. And I hate it that it got down to just throwing the ball out there and getting the penalties to get your big play.
Now, here's the good news.
By the way, he's not wrong. Get fined for stuff
not
like that,
not
though.
One thing he said was wrong.
100%. There. But here's the good news. If you want the penalties to start to go away a little bit and you want things to change, all you have to do is get Jerry Jones to act on it or speak on it, because that's how things get changed. How did the stadium deal get done in L.A.?
Jerry Jones.
Yeah, they might have screwed some people over in St. Louis, but never mind all that. You know, $790 million, a little hush money, and we're all good here. You want something changed, Jerry Jones is the guy to get it changed, and I'm curious to see if they start letting some of this stuff go.
But you do understand that players get fined for doing what Jerry Jones just did in his soundbite.
Well, now they won't have to. We were good.
Fine, guys.
What? Well, so how does this play out? They will. Maybe they'll find the organization. Look, the Anthony Brown plays. That's something that I'm not like being disparaging about him talking about his play. He might get cut. Like that's the type of stuff when that happens. You look at a guy like that in the team meetings the next day, and you're just like, man, every team's going to throw at him from here on out. And not that they didn't already throw at him in general. I think once Trayvon Diggs got off to that good start, you know, then people maybe started to shy away a little bit and throw more Anthony Brown's way. But, I mean, it's one of those deals where I would not be shocked either if they just didn't put him out there or if there wasn't something else that came from that. And it's not that he's not going to find a job elsewhere. He can't play in the NFL. That is one of those glaring weaknesses, break in the chain, that every team's going to say, third down, critical situation, who do we go after? We're going after Anthony Brown.
Especially on that stage, right? I mean,
yes.
Oh, man.
Well, that stage yesterday, but I'm saying moving forward.
Yeah.
That's their problem, is moving forward now, they got to make a decision and they got to make a change because there's blood in the water and the sharks are coming. Every quarterback they see, every OC that it starts to scheme against them is going to try to isolate him and try to get him in a compromising spot.
God, that's rough. Well, listen, happy Thanksgiving anyways.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific. On Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Now, Brady won't be able to attend the fireside chats with LeVar at his mansion up there where grizzly bears roam the earth. But that's because he is in Michigan getting ready for the game, which I'm saying this right now. Hands down, the best rivalry in college football. I know everybody's got personal feelings one way or the other, but just on the outside, generally speaking, you can keep the Iron Bowl. You can keep the Palmetto Bowl. You can keep the Apple Cup. You can keep all
Palmetto
of that stuff.
Bowl.
Yeah, well, you know, Clemson,
that's not
South
even the
Carolina.
Top 10, bro.
Clemson,
get
South Carolina. You can keep all that stuff. To me, Michigan, Ohio State, I think is the best, top-notch. The presentation, the time the game kicks off, growing up, 9 or 9:30 in the morning, Michigan, Ohio State, late November. I love it. I can't wait. And I'm sure the atmosphere is going to be crazy this weekend.
It's always electric.
Look, what people don't understand, especially out on the West Coast, is like it's a cultural thing. Like I've tried to explain to people, if you got Ohio plates and you're driving in the state of Michigan this week, better stop at that stop sign. You better not be going, you know, you better not be going over the speed limit. I'm telling you, like people will look for reasons to give you a ticket. It is bragging rights. It is like the difference between that team up north and that team below us. Like it's, I'm telling you, it is that impactful, I think, in people's lives, especially when you're from either one of those states and the conversations that ensue over that next year. Like when you talk about legitimate bragging rights, like it is legitimate bragging rights. You know, we can joke and talk about the weather and all that kind of stuff, but when you don't have quite as much to look forward to, like those warm, nice days like LeVar is talking about, guess what you look forward to? Guess what your entire year is about? It's about this game. There's been some of the greatest players to have ever played. We'll have, you know, Charles Woodson on the set, which is just a bad, bad dude, man. I mean, I remember watching him play when he was young. Like, I remember that as a kid, seeing that. Him and the battles of him and David Boston.
Oh, David Boston.
Jeez.
That's a blast from the past.
I
mean,
I watched a coach, a successful coach in John Cooper, lose his job over this game.
Yep.
He was successful. They used to win a lot of football games. He used to put out all sorts of talent that would go on to the NFL. Some of the all-time greats. Guys like Orlando Pace, Eddie George, Terry Glenn. I mentioned David Boston. I mean, you're talking about some of the like some all-time greats. He used to pump those guys out. He could recruit. He could do everything. Couldn't beat Michigan. Lost his job over it. And you know what Jim Tressel said? The first moment he was announced in St. John's Arena, he didn't make any other promise other than beating Michigan. Mm. And that first year, they weren't great. They were 7-5. You know what they did, though? They beat Michigan. Like, that is all this is about. And I think that's one of the things, like, talking to Coach Meyer during the, you know, the couple years we were working together, was he was like, it is a 365-day-a-year thing for me. Because I'm from Ohio. I understand how this works. And I think that was maybe one of the differences when you listen to Harbaugh and you listen to maybe somehow other Michigan coaches or people have handled it is, they don't look at it quite the same as the way Ohio State does. Like, it's just not acceptable to lose to Michigan. And so, like, this is going to be a great game because this might be Jim Harbaugh's best shot. It might be his best team to match up with Ohio State. But I don't know, man. I still don't see it happen. I think it has to play out a very specific way, almost like we talked about with Michigan State. Like, it has to play out a very specific way in order for Michigan to win. If I was handicapping this game, I would put the line at 10.5. That's what I see on film, at least.
Ooh, yeah, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And being from the 10 and watching how that thing played out every year, you know, there's a lot of excitement that's connected to it, even if you weren't a part of the rivalry and seeing where they're at right now. I mean, the one thing you got to say is looking at Ohio State, and the way they were able to, you mentioned Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer put them back, you know, after the whole Tressel, you know, debacle.
Well, hold on. Tressel never let off the gas. Tressel went to more national championships than Urban did.
But just the whole way his departure took place and everything that happened.
Well, I don't know if that was Tressel. That was some BS, if you ask me.
That's fair. I get it.
Tattoos we're talking about?
Yeah, I get it. But when those type of things happen, those can be the death of a program. Like, a program could go in so many different directions based off of how unceremonious somebody may leave the program. And so to me, when Urban came in, I think a lot of people in the Big Ten circles felt as though he was going to be a fish out of water, because the football in the Big Ten is much different than what it is in an ACC or an SEC. It's just different. When you talk about the top heaviness of one division versus coming to another division where it's a bloodbath every other week, and then you're talking about the level of competitiveness in that that rivalry.
His Ohio State teams look like SEC teams after a couple of years, to where you would see the way they would match up against Michigan, and it was like two different types of athletes.
Two different types. And it's still that,
That had more to do with the offense that he wanted to run. That was more symbolic of what he did at Florida, where he had success really beating Ohio State, right? Like, he had an up-close, in-person, like, view of what Ohio State's offense was and what he was doing. And I think he was like, I'm going to take this to the Big Ten because I think it can work there if we can recruit the type of athletes that I'm recruiting to Florida. And he did. But,
and
like,
it's still that way.
But let's not get things twisted. Jim Tressel won a national championship beating arguably the most talented college football team in ever.
I mean,
He went to back-to-back. He won a ton of bowl games. I faced them straight up. He pumped a lot of guys off into the NFL as far as top-round draft picks and talents. Yeah. So it wasn't like – I mean, that's the thing about Michigan is if you're a Michigan fan and you want to hold your standard to Ohio State
– oh, God.
You got to realize that you've never been
– ever.
In their stratosphere, ever.
You know, Ohio State's got one losing season since 1989. Think about that. Since 1989.
Well, how many national championships does Michigan have in the past 50 years?
Well, and the one losing season they have was the Luke Fickell year, because that was after the tattoo stuff. So they went 6-7 that year. Other than that, you got to go all the way back to 88 for their last losing season, which was, I think, right before John Cooper got there. Like, that's why I've never understood the Jim Harbaugh's got to do this. He's got to compete with Ohio State. When have they competed with Ohio State? Like, I mean, this is like you're dealing with an absolute juggernaut. They're a top 2-3 team in college football. I think Harbaugh's been successful, but I don't think he's ever been, and that program's ever been on the same level as Ohio State.
You have to do it like we talked about James Franklin. You have to do it once or twice, though. Like, and this again, here's the thing about this year's matchup that I love is the two first round edge rushers that they've got. That's on Michigan's side, not on Ohio State. It's been Ohio State in past years. You know, the ground attack. Now, Ohio State's come on, but you could have made the case that it was Michigan. They were leading the Big Ten in rushing for a while. You know, I think Ohio State's come along, Wisconsin's come along. And then you started saying, all right, like, do they have the playmakers on the outside? Like, yeah. Like, you go look at Cornelius Johnson, for example. He's going to have a shot to play in the league. Eric Alder, tight end, very athletic. He'll have a shot. Roman Wilson's got blazing speed. Like, they've got some guys. Now, you question, you know, the quarterback and all that. Like, my biggest thing is, you know, when I watch tape on Cade McNamara, and he's been good. You know, he's been good. But they're going to have to be able to combat at times Ohio State's big playability with big plays. He only throws the football over like 20 yards or more. In fact, we'll say 10 yards or more. He only does that about 30% of the time. Which it's just, that doesn't stress a defense. If everything is 10 yards and either around the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage, your defense is playing on a tilt the entire game because they never feel threatened. They never feel like they have to get into a backpedal. And Ohio State is the antithesis of that. Like you constantly are in a backpedal because you're so worried about Olave and Wilson and Jackson Smith and Jigba. So that's the thing is it's going to take pressure on DJ Stroud by those potential first-round edge rushers. It's going to take them running the football. That's part of it. But it's going to take Cade McNamara being able to create some big plays of their own. You know, like we saw beating Penn State. You know, big completion to Eric Hall ends up, you know, stealing the game. Like, it's going to take – and granted, it wasn't downfield. It was a short little shallow route. They kind of had some picks for him and you know, maybe a busting coverage. And then you see, you know, him running off in the end zone. So that's what it's going to take.
I can't wait, man. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Just real quick before you take us to break, the beauty of a rivalry is when you look at the overall record, because at any point in time, there can be a shift. And right now, Ohio State is on top in the shift of what's taking place. But what rivalries restored represent is the other side of it, the Wolverines finding a way to create a shift, right? In the overall series, Michigan is still up 58 wins to 51. So overall, Michigan leads the series between the two teams. So this is one of those things where rivalries, everything has to go out the door, even though they've been dominated.
They've won twice in the last 20 years.
It was early in the 1900s.
They had a head start.
But here's the thing. But that's what a rivalry represents. I mean, that's the beauty of the age, the timelessness of what a rivalry represents.
I just want a close game, single possession. Just give me a close game down the stretch. That's all I want.
I don't think it will.
Hey, I think Ryan Day is going to take out a battle axe because hey, remember what game they didn't play last year? Remember what big rivalry game they didn't play?
Yeah, that's a bummer. I just think
Just saying, some people thought it was a conspiracy theory too. Yeah. That was thrown out there last year. Yeah. I'm not going that far.
They were trying to avoid getting
another beating. I think Harbaugh will be bloviating at his post.
I think Ryan Day is going to remember that because remember it was potentially going to stop Ohio State from having another win to help them get into the college football playoff. Trust me, if they get up in this game, they're putting their foot on the gas and they aren't even thinking about touching the brakes.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, LeVar, if you're not convinced the Bears are a Super Bowl contender after yesterday, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what you were watching. But Nagy did talk to reporters afterwards and talk to the media about the rumors that were out there over the past several days.
So there was a report that came out that was false, and that's where it started. And then we had practice, and we continued with our days, and we had our practices like we normally would. And I cleared it up with the team. And then, as I think everybody is aware, the next day, George came in and had a good talk with the team and confirmed that that was true. And then we went about our business.
So that being said, they're still not very good. That is not a very good football team.
I don't buy that. See, what needed to happen was Nagy and Dalton needed to have a resurrection of what they had originally planned on. And they had the opportunity to do it on Thanksgiving.
Theory?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Unsolved mysteries.
We need something for this.
Hey, come on now. Robert Stack is now joining us in studio here. He's got his trench coat on. He's got a Santa hat, but he is wearing an N95 mask for you people out there concerned. Robert Stack is back with us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's actually playing a kazoo version of Unsolved Mysteries. Take it away, LeVar.
All right. So what happened here? Was you had a very, very interesting movement where they allowed Justin Fields to get them ribs cracked a little bit. Justin had to take the week off in a desperate action to change the fortunes of this franchise, this football team. They had a come together meeting as a group of captains and leaders of the team and said, we need Andy Dalton back in the game, but we don't know how to do it. So we're going to allow for Justin Fields to get his ass beat up and he won't be able to play. And now we're going to have to put in Andy Dalton and he's going to come in. And on one of the biggest stages in all of football during the course of the year, Thanksgiving, the Bears shall anoint Andy Dalton the starter for the rest of the season. And we're going to contend for the NFC North.
Bam. Well done. That is Andy hit the post.
Wow.
That is a job. Can we get a round of applause for LeVar Arrington?
Bam. I think he's on to something.
Yeah.
I think he's on to something.
Nagy, you believe, and Brady, you said this when Justin Fields came in that game against Cleveland. He wasn't ready to go, and Nagy probably knew that from the get-go.
Yeah, you know that. I mean, look, when you first draft a player, in particular a quarterback, but like any, this really is for any player, there's a lot of verbiage, and there's a lot to these offenses, what you're asked to do. And when they start, like, you get in the huddle, and guys don't know even where to line up, or a quarterback has a hard time repeating the play in the huddle, and then you go out there, and they have a hard time executing the play. Now, they might have run the play before, but it's the entire operation. It's like every piece of it,
when you have someone who you can see a drastic difference between Andy Dalton, how he operates as a veteran, and then Justin Fields, where Dalton's done it before, he knows how it's supposed to sound, he knows how it's supposed to look. Fields has an idea, but he's like different level, still figuring that out. It's very obvious. And there's things naturally that, like, I don't care what offense, if I was to go into a game and play right now, I'm running. I know if like we have a certain run play, I know how we can block that or how it can work versus certain defenses and fronts. And so it doesn't matter what you call the play, I can help make the run right. Like, that's what a veteran presence brings. Or, hey, it looks like they're bringing this, you know, this sort of pressure. Okay, here's what we're doing with the offensive line. You guys are blocking these, you know, these five guys over here, back your guy here to here. Like, you could do all of that. When you're a rookie, you walk in like you don't know, like, how, if you're supposed to, all those things. So I just I think there's a drastic difference there, and it was probably eye-opening for Matt Nagy. And then as the season went on, he realized, I don't have another card to play. This team's not good enough. Dalton's not playing well enough. He gets hurt. Like, at some point, I've got to put Fields in just to ultimately take some pressure off of me.
Do you guys think it was Matt Nagy or somebody above Nagy who said go to Fields?
Above.
Yeah, I agree.
Above.
Because the timing of it was weird. He had said Andy Dalton's a starter. He kept saying Andy Dalton's a starter when he comes back from injury. And then all of a sudden he came back the next day and was like, Justin Fields is going to be the starter moving forward. That had to have been from above. Somebody who talked to Matt Nagy about it. Had to have been. I just didn't buy it.
Well, you didn't have to buy it yesterday. And they won the game. Now,
dominant performance.
However you want to look at it, however you like to look at it, there's always the possibility that you could have said that, you know what, for the Bears to have put up the 16 points that they were able to do and outlast the Lions at 14.
That's right. Outlast Justin them, Fields,
Justin Fields may not have been the one that did that. Maybe Justin Fields might have been only good for 10 points or only 3 points.
Can I ask this question? Are we going to ask about Matt Nagy's job security?
Yes.
After every
yes,
game.
Absolutely.
I think
all
it's
because
a great
of
question.
Patch.com.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your site.
Patch has led the way.
Yeah. Patch.com.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And they've gotten all of those people to start chanting out, you know, fire Nagy. You know, it's Patch is on
is
the
that
rise.
More of an indictment of how manipulative we are. They haven't fired a coach during the season in 100 years.
Yeah.
And they're going to start now?
See, they did this when Trestman, the final year Mark Trestman was there, they were harassing, like his daughter was getting harassed at school, and now Nagy's kids are getting harassed. Like, that's the part of this that I think a lot of people sort of...
Take umbrage with.
Well, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman kind of alluded to it.
They mentioned it. Yeah.
They're like, look, it's the family who's got to wear this. Like, I mean...
The coaches are insulated, I think, is what he said.
Yeah,
but the families are exposed.
Yeah, and the fact that you've got, I mean, like, his kids don't have anything to do with this. Like, are people that, I get you're fanatical and they love the Bears. They're, you know, the top team in town, but come on, for God's sakes, man. I mean, like, what are you doing harassing kids?
Well, so you said the coaches are insulated. Coaches and players are callous to it.
Yeah, they are.
We hear it
some.
All the time. Well, some, but still yeah. To a degree, different degrees, but we hear it every time we go into a road stadium, right? You know, you hear that. You hear when people are talking trash to you and that sort of thing. So, you know, we're naturally callous to it. It's your family that's not used to that atmosphere. And that's the hard thing to explain to them or to demonstrate to them, like, how you have to, you know, overcome that, you know, or how you have to not focus on that and focus on the task at hand. And that's the hard thing. Like, most people aren't geared for that. It's a small percentage as far as head coaches, players who are able to handle that. And so when it starts getting to their family, that's what makes the job miserable. That's what makes it difficult to be able to focus on, because now it hits home. And that's a whole different type of emotional feeling for any player or head coach when things aren't going well.
And not everybody has Matt Stafford's wife who's got a pretzel cannon attached to her shoulder, and she just fires food at people when they get out of line. Hey, it's got to happen. Got to take care of matters.
I'm on high school campuses pretty much every day. I'm around high school people every day. The amount of cattiness that takes place at the high school level is almost adult level. at this point. And the weirdness of it all is that they can get their cattiness across by being influencers on social media within their whole ecosystem at that high school. And it's pretty wild. So stuff like that leads to some really, really serious issues, man. Like, it's, you know, people could take it light and say, oh, this is, you know, this and it's that. But in the grand scheme of things, when you look at the dynamics that play out on high school campuses, it can get really, really intense. Like, really intense. And it can become really, really disruptive to a family in a way that, man, like, you know, like where you're talking about needing to either get them out of the school or get them help.
Yeah.
And that's never any good, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.